Okay, this is Charming Windows 8. First to get started, when I say charms, who actually knows what I mean? Cool. Okay, so to recap for everyone else, the Windows 8 charms are what happens when, say, in a Windows 8 app, you swipe out from the side. So on a desktop like this, we swipe out from the side and we see these five charms. From the top, search, share, start, devices and settings. Now, on a tablet device, we just swipe out from the side. On a mouse and keyboard, we can just take our mouse to the top right corner, and they'll show up. Or with just a keyboard, Windows C. So these are common integration points you can hook into in all your Windows 8 apps. And so what this talk is going to be about is going through each of these four charms, because we can't do anything about start, and show you what they do in other apps, how you can add them to your app, and just some hints and tips and tricks about them at the same time. So I'm doing this on the Windows 8.1 Pro Preview. I didn't think I was going to risk the wrath of the demo gods and reinstall my machine the day before my talk. But most of this stuff will work in Windows 8 as well as Windows 8.1. I'll highlight when it's different between them. But most of this will apply to both. Although the 8.1 is a free upgrade on October 17th. So, you know, I'd expect most people, if you're building apps from now on in, you'd probably be targeting 8.1 anyway. So who am I? I'm Nigel Sampson. I'm a senior app developer at Marker Metro. We're a apps agency up here in Auckland. So my entire day job is building Windows 8 and Windows Phone apps. So let's get into it, because I've got a lot of content to cover. So obviously the first one is search. Now, I'll actually demo how it looks in an application. And we'll start off with the store, which isn't there anymore. So when search is possibly the one that's had the biggest change between 8.0 and 8.1, which is an awkward place to start, but that's how it goes. So previously, search was something you could search, you know, from your start screen. You'd start typing, and you'd see a list of apps down on the right here where you could, you know, apps that supported search, and you could launch into there to say, I want to search the store, or I want to search something else. Only about 3% of people actually did this. Most people, what they really wanted when they started searching here was to search everything, search their files, search their settings, search apps, and, you know, what apps they have, et cetera, and use it as a launcher. So Microsoft has changed a few things in 8.1. So when I search here, as I said, it searches everything. I can filter from everywhere, settings, files, and so on. And they also now have a smart search app. So when I pick a search result, I get this experience. So in this case, I'm searching for Auckland, so I see what's called a hero, some good photos, the weather, some facts from Bing about it, and then we get into sort of web results and then app results based on my search. You'll notice a couple of things here. Above the Wikipedia entry, we see a link for Wikipedia, and what this is called an app map search result. So if I tap that, we launch into the Wikipedia app for Auckland, and so on. So that's the biggest change. So how do we get search into our app? So what they've done in 8.1 is add a search box control. So if we look in the store, which is a great example, we now see up in the top right a search box. So this is where you'll do most of your work for search. And so if I can search in here for something like Disney, we see result suggestions. And if I turn back a bit, we also see what are called query suggestions. So the top parts there are result suggestions. These are matching perfect results. And the ones below that are suggestions for queries. And if we tap one of these, we go straight through to the appropriate part of the store. So how do we do this in our own app? What I've created is a Channel 9 video search app. From here, we've got our search box. I can see when I tap into it, the search history. So these are searches I've already done, in this case, Windows. If I start typing, give it a couple of seconds for a rather slow internet connection, I get my search suggestions from Channel 9. And then when I hit enter, I get my results updated. So how do we add this to our app? Simply, we have a new control called search box. Now, the first two parts, first line is really just sort of design stuff, some padding, etc. The placeholder text is there, you know, if you want a guide to user what you're actually going to search here. If you've got multiple search boxes through your application, you may end up having different search boxes searching different things. So using the placeholder text to tell them what they expect from this is probably a good idea. Probably the important one is this bottom one here. It's a event for query submitted. So when I'm typing and I hit enter, the query submitted event's going to execute. Now, I'm using query submitted because I have to go off to the internet and get results. And that means it's going to take a couple of seconds to sort this out. If you were doing sort of in-place filtering, you had all your results downloaded already, and you just wanted to sort of let them filter those results down, you might want to use the query changed event, so you can respond on every key press and filter that down. But I'd only do that if you have all your results already sort of cached locally, because if you're going to hit the internet on every key press, you're just going to slow things down. So query submit is pretty easy. If we go to the definition for that, we simply get an args with a query text. In this case, I'm then going off and querying my search, which simply queries channel 9 and sets the results into an item source. The next part you probably want to do, because that's basically the basic integration. Like if that's all you want to do, very quick, very easy. But we can go a step further and start suggesting results and so on. So back in our search box control, we have an event called suggestions requested. So this is obviously fired when the search box wants to find. Wants to request suggestions from channel 9. In this case, we have our event up here. So this is the code we're going to step through for a second here. First thing we're going to do is if the query text is less than 5 characters, we're just going to ignore it. You know, we're not going to get good results if they've just typed, wind or something like that. Let's wait a bit till they've typed a bit more. Now, this next line, the deferral, is a bit complicated. But because I'm going off to the internet and WinRT is completely asynchronous and I'm using the async await keywords, what's going to happen if I don't have this next line, what's going to happen is we go off to the internet, the method here finishes, the event finishes, and the search box thinks, oh, you didn't tell me anything. You haven't given me any suggestions. I won't display anything. Then our method comes back from the internet, we fill up our suggestions, but it's too late. The search box thinks we've already sort of lost it. What this deferral does is sort of tells the search box, hey, I'm not quite done yet. And you'll see this pattern a lot throughout these charms. Our next thing is we go to the search service and request our results from channel 9. I then quickly double check that, after this second or so, that the request isn't being cancelled. So this is a case of make sure the search box hasn't said, you know what, I don't actually need your results anymore. They've gone on and typed a few more things. From there, I'm taking my top 5 results. I'm setting up an image. If my result has a thumbnail, I'll use that. If not, I'll use a placeholder. Then I add to the request its search suggestion collection, and I call add result suggestion. I pass through the title, some author information, an item link, an image and a title. Now the item link, this parameter here, where I'm using item link, is very important. The parameter is called tag, if you look at the IntelliSense, and it's basically used as a unique identifier for this search result. So whatever you use in this third parameter here, make sure it's unique to this result. I'll tell you why in a minute. And after that, we call deferral complete. So that deferral we got back up there to tell the search box, hey, we're not quite done yet. Now we're saying, yep, we're actually done. Go off and display our results. That's pretty much it. So, as I said, as we type stuff in here, give it a second, we get our search results. Some of those have thumbnails that we can actually display, and others are using placeholders. You can see where I've got the title and the author information passed into those result suggestions, and we get a reasonably good experience at that point. So what do we do when they actually select a result? We have another method here called result suggestion chosen. So what happens when they actually click it? In this case, the parameter on the args doesn't give you the actual result they chose. It just gives you the tag of the result they chose. So that's why I said it's got to be unique, because that's what you've been given when they pick it, so you can refer back to what they've chosen. I then query to get the information about that video and navigate off to my details page. So we can see here, when I tap result, we go straight through to actual result rather than actually having to worry about executing the search itself. Cool. So that's search. So most important things here, as I said, search has moved away from the charm and into the app through the search box control. That API I talked about on the search box about results suggested, results chosen, and query suggestions and all this, this all still work in 8 against what's called the search pane. So if you're migrating or you want to do some backporting, the API between search pane in Windows 8 and search box in Windows 8.1 is almost identical. You can almost copy and paste code across. And so you're not going to have to rebuild a lot when moving to search box. A lot of these new integration features have yet to be announced. This was in build. They talked about new things like the app map web results, about getting your app into that hero. I was hoping they'd talk before October 17th about the stuff, or even before RTM, but it looks like they haven't. But we can expect to see more stuff around, you know, being able to integrate your app into this part here. So you can see here, you know, some apps are providing details there. If I search for something like Miley Cyrus, I have to. No, sorry about that. Searching for Miley Cyrus is a bit risky, but we'll go. So we can see here quickly that we get extra information. We get apps that, you know, show stuff like, you know, playing the songs, which will link into the music app as part of the hero. And then we see more app results here that show me news and so on. So this stuff is still coming. And I expect it to get a lot better in the sort of next couple of weeks. So, share. When we first talk about share, everyone sort of thinks about Facebook, Twitter, social networks. And then they think, well, my app shouldn't really share to those stuff, so I'm not going to bother with it. I think that's slightly wrong. My opinion is the best way to think about share is, how do I get data out of my app into other apps? Right. So it's about sharing data rather than just sharing to social networks. So a great example here, I'm in the music app. My wife's been at this, so there's Britney Spears in here. Get used to that. Sorry about that. So I'm in the music app here. Select a song, Lady Gaga. Bring the charm out, hit share. And I see the list of apps that support sharing for this data. So what happens is Windows 8, when you select to share some data, you populate the share request with the different things, files, images, text, HTML, links, and then different other apps register themselves as saying, I support sharing text and images, or I support sharing files and HTML. And then Windows makes the choice based off what you're sharing and what they've registered and populates the appropriate list of apps from this case. So I can bookmark this song for later, I can put it out on Twitter, I can email it to someone, or I can save some text into OneNote. So that's kind of the social network stuff, the Facebook, the Twitter. So some really good examples of different ways of thinking about this is if... some of the there's a Windows Phone app you can install on here, and so what that typically does is if you've got your Windows Phone plugged in, and I think that app registers itself as being able to accept files, so what you can do is sort of share file, send it to your phone. So it's really about the app, about what that app does, and there's nothing stopping you writing your own app that does something like that. Essentially, I mean, you could write an iOS app that runs on Windows 8 that all it did was copy to your plugged-in iPhone or something like that. Depends. So what I was going to show was, let's just bring up Mail, some rather sort of different examples other than social network about this. So for instance, I have no idea what the word sponsorship means. I'm a little bit thick sometimes. What I can do is bring out share, and Wikipedia is registered as saying, I know how to share text, which is kind of a weird thing because you don't really want to share to Wikipedia. But if I bring invoke Wikipedia, I now get the dictionary entry for sponsorship right there in there, and then I can go back to my mail. So really easily, Wikipedia's done something quite different about share. It's a way to quickly invoke their app to get some data and then come back to yours. Another great example is, let's say this is a bug report. Someone sent me an email saying, I found a bug in your app. Something's not quite working. Select the text, bring out share, hit Hubbug, which is a GitHub app, and I can quickly post this as an issue to GitHub and so on. Right from here, hit send, we're done. So it's not just about sharing to social networks. It's about getting your data from one app to another. And I think if you kind of think about it for a while, you can get some really sort of inventive ways of doing this stuff. So in our channel line app again, I'm going to go through the same thing. We're at a video, hit share. We get the appropriate list of apps. So we can go through how this is done. And that's actually really nice and easy. So all this is done through a class called the Data Transfer Manager. And when we enter this page, what we're going to do is get the Transfer Manager for our current page, for our current view. Now, this view can be your application or your page. In this case, it's just going to be the page. We then attach to an event called data requested. So this event's going to fire when they invoke the charm. And on that data request, we're going to set some properties. The first one is the title. So this is what's going to show at the top of the charm. The next one is the description. Now, often you might think this is the description of what you're sharing, maybe in this case the channel line video. It's best to put in there a sort of a description of the package, essentially. Because if we go back to the app and invoke share, we can see at the top there our title and our description. So if we describe what we're sharing in terms of data, in this case I'm sharing the link to the Channel 9 website, then the user's got a better idea of what that probably they should invoke, what app they should pick. You know, if you're sending text, tell them you're sending text and so on. Below that, I'm setting a thumbnail on the request, if the video has a thumbnail. And then the two really important lines are these two at the bottom. So the top three, where I'm setting request on data.properties, these are only pieces of data sort of describing what we're going to send or showing the user this is what we're sharing. The bottom two, where we call our method basically starting with set, is where we're actually setting the data. This is what's going to be shared. So I'm setting two things. I'm setting the web link. So this is a link to a website, obviously, and it's the link to Channel 9 for this video. The next line is I'm setting HTML, which is the body description of that video. So if they want to save that to OneNote, they can save it like that. Yep. I don't know. I don't believe so. But what they also have, so you'll also see in here, are a whole lot of other set methods. So we've got set bitmap, set HTML, obviously, set RTF, set storage items, which is files, set application link, which is a link if you want to create a link to another app within the Windows 8 ecosystem. There's also set data. And that allows you to set custom data that doesn't fit one of the other descriptions. Now, this one's a bit more difficult because you've got to sort of specify, this is the type of data I'm specifying, and here's our data. And the chances of another app having that being able to accept that custom data format is probably pretty low unless you write that app yourself. If you're going to, though, there's a great series of sort of standards called schema.org, which allows you to specify things like geolocations, addresses, and so on. And there's a great library on GitHub, I believe, called Transshipment, which is for Windows 8, and allows you, basically gives you more methods on this data request, so you can set address, geolocation, and so on, and hopefully provides a bit more of a standard for that sort of stuff. So that's share. As I said, probably the most important thing to think about is that it's more than just Facebook or Twitter. As more apps become sources and targets, the combinations between email and Wikipedia or music and SkyDrive or Dropbox become a lot more interesting. Be generous with what you share. So if you've got quite a bit of data, set as many of those set methods as you can, because that increases the surface area or the target targets that you can actually pick from and gives the user more choice. Be inventive about being a share target. So as you saw, like Wikipedia and GitHub, yeah, they've got different ideas about what sharing can be. It's not just, as I said, posting to Twitter. It's about I can accept data and I can do something with it. So if like your app has any sort of content creation in any way, some sort of data entry form, you know, it might be a good target to be a share target in some way. Devices. So devices are about a lot of different things. In this case, we're going to cover two of them, Play 2 and Print. So Play 2 is about sort of the opposite of apps. Oh, sorry, opposite of share. Share is about how do I get my data onto other apps. Devices is about how do I get my data onto other devices. And it's, you know, the same thought process applies, that if you're wanting to have, you know, good data in your app and you feel like you've got ways to get it out there, devices is a good one for this as well, especially for media content. So Play 2 is the first part of this. There's two parts, Play 2 and Print. And Play 2 is about the DLNA protocol. So this is sharing to things like your Xbox 360, your Samsung Smart TVs, your other computers on your machine that you've set up for remote control. I'd love to demo that with an Xbox One or something like that, but I couldn't get one. So, Play 2. Quickly show what it looks like. So if we go to the videos app, we'll start a video. The internet connection goes okay. From here, bring out devices, and we get three options. So this is something that's changed in 8.0 and 8.1. Previously, you'd just see all your devices listed there, and it'd be kind of up to you to think, well, what would it do if I sent it to my printer? What would it do if I sent it to my TV? Now they've grouped them together into three options, Play, Print, and Project. So Project is your standard. You know, this will always be available. And you know, don't worry about this one. This one basically happens for free. Play, right now we get an error message here. You know, that's saying, right now, if you want to play this, have another device on your network. Now, you can't test this by, you know, using two apps on the same network. You've got to have another device on your network that you can actually share to. So this can be done a couple of different ways. If you've got just another machine, you can run a Windows Media Player. And under Stream, turn on media streaming. Actually, I think I can't get an option because I'm on a public network here. Oh, here we go. And we can turn on allow remote control of my player. So what this does is turns your machine here into what's called a Play 2 receiver, much like a Xbox 360 or a smart TV. and then on another machine, you can now play to that media player. So it's a great way if you want to project, if you know, you're running a commercial enterprise where you need to project stuff out to a front-end display, you can do some really interesting things this way. Just for comparison purposes, if I'm in another app, like email, try that again. Bring out play. We get a different error message. In this case, the app can't be doesn't have anything to send. So if you really can't test with the second device, you've got the two error messages there. If play to is not working, you'll see that one. You know, we can't play to another device. If it is working, you'll see the to play you need a device. So how do we get this done? Realistically, if you've got just one video player or one audio player on your page, you'll get it for free. That's the fantastic thing about this one. You don't need to do a single line of code to get Play-Doh to work, and you can advertise in your app description, I play to Xbox, I play to smart TVs, you can share content really easily. And that's fantastic because, like, you know, it's a free feature. But there are some things you may want to do to get this to work. And just like Share, we have a Play To Manager, and we get that for our current view. We attach the source requested event. So this is saying, hey, I want some source. And then down here, we go through a deferral mechanism again, just because this one happens off the UI thread. And this important line here is on the source request. I have a media player on the page called Media Details, and it has a property called PlayToSource. I set that into the request. I'm done. So if default source selection, which is the process of, you know, when you invoke PlayTo, default source selection will go through, look in your page to find a media player and use that for it. If that didn't exist, this is how you'd do it. And the reason you might want to do this is that you might want to configure this to do some slightly different things. You might want to send a slideshow to your 360 or something like that. And that's because the image control also has a PlayTo source property. And from there, you can set that image, send it over the wire to your 360, and show it up on a big screen. And the very cool thing then is if you change the image on your machine here, it changes it on the 360. So you now got programmatic control of a slideshow from your device on another screen. So that's quite cool. The other thing you might want to do here is something called preferred source. So under the source request, on the Play-To source of the media element, there is a property called preferred source URI. So this is a case of if you want to send a different video to the other device, maybe it's an HD device, so you want to send a higher bitrate one, or if the video you're trying to share has DRM, if you send the preferred source, what this does is basically has the DLNA device connect directly to this preferred source, and rather than going routing through your machine, it enables things like DRM, which is really handy. So if you are sort of sharing protected video from somewhere, like from Azure Media Services or something like this, then you can use Play-To with preferred source and pass that on to a 360. The second part about this is print. So go into something like mail again, bring out devices, hit print. We have our list of printers from here. And we get poke out here, and we get a preview of what we're about to print, and obviously the normal printer settings. So this is possibly the hardest charm to do. The reason is that there's a lot of work involved because, for the most part, the rest of the charms are about just sending data to somewhere else or providing a bit of extra data. Print, you've got to be able to provide printable versions of your pages that you actually want to print and manage things like layout and settings and so on. So I'll go through a really quick version of this and show you how it's done. So, just like all the rest, we have a print manager. and grab that for the current view. And attach to the print task requested event. So this is a case of we've pulled out the charm, we've hit print, the event is fired. Here we go through a mechanism of calling create print task. We set a title, in this case the title of our video, and a delegate to be called when we want this actual task created. We go through a process of using the deferral again, because again this is happening off the UI thread, and we create a print document. So the print document is going to represent what we're printing on page, and we attach a couple of events. Again, this, most of these charms are event-based, so you'll get used to this kind of mechanism. The two events we want are get preview page. So this is going to be called when the charm wants to display a preview of what you're printing, and add pages. So this is going to be called when we actually have to add the pages to the printful. So get add pages is probably going to be called once. Get preview page may end up being called multiple times, and this may happen when they want to change what they're printing. You know, if they say, I only want to print page 2 or page 3, it'll be called again to say, get me the preview for page 2, page 3, and so on. So the preview page, it's not that difficult for me, because I'm assuming one very important thing. I'm assuming that my print document's only going to be one page long. You know, I'm not going to have War and Peace as a description for a channel line video. So that makes my code a lot simpler. If you're going to go past one page, you've basically got to handle your own pagination, how you want to break up your content over multiple pages. And that's basically where a lot of the complication comes in. But by making this assumption, it simplifies my code quite a bit. So I have another XAML page called Details Print View. So this is a really simple XAML page, obviously, because it's going to be printed out. You know, I'm not going to have massive backgrounds or complications. It's basically a grid with two text blocks. I'm displaying the title and the text for this video with some nice margins to pad it up. I create an instance of that XAML page. And I initialize it with my data, which basically sets those two text blocks. The next two lines are a bit weird, but because my XAML page isn't being displayed on the screen, the XAML framework isn't going to do the work to lay it out. You know, it's not going to work out how big it needs to be, how that textbook's going to look. So I need to give it a bit of a kick and tell it, despite the fact you're not on screen, I want you to lay yourself out, measure yourself, work out how big you need to be. So that's what invalidate measure and update layout do, is give that a bit of a kick and tell it, lay yourself out. The last line is on the document. I call set preview page. I tell it what page number I'm actually setting this for. In this case, it's always going to be page 1. And then I pass that XAML document to the preview page, and it's done. The next method, as we saw, was add pages. This is called, as I said, when we want to add all our pages to the XAML. In this case, we are only going to add one. So the layouts, that's preview page, sorry. Our code's going to be almost identical. Create our details XAML, initialize it with our data, give it a bit of a kick to update its layout, call add page to add it to our principal, then add page is complete. We're done. Tell the printer we're ready. Go ahead. So if we're in our details here, I hit devices, print, pick our printer. Yeah, so already a simple layout in this case, our title, our two text blocks, laid out in a nice simple manner and ready to print. You can put anything in here. If it's XAML, you can do it. You know, you can put images, you can flow them any way you want. You've got full control. You know, if you've got XAML on one end, you can basically repurpose a lot of it for XAML in your print. But you've already got to think about how it's going to be laid out, how it's going to work. Like a bright red background would probably be a bad idea. I imagine your office won't like your ink bill. So you will have to do some thought process about how it's going to work in a different environment. So devices. It's shared to external device. It's the same way as share. Then, you know, it's about how can I get data out of my app onto a different device. If you've got media in your app, why not have Play 2? If you're playing music, you've got slideshows. you've got video. Do Play 2. It's about 20 minutes, half an hour to get this in there, and it's another feature request you can put in your app description. And for certain apps, it's fantastic. For the Build app here, don't worry about that. Build app is one that shows all the videos from the latest Build conference. You know, when you come home, you missed half of them, right? So you can sit on the couch, fire up your laptop, and play to your Xbox, something like that. You can just relax. It's a lot easier. So why not? Images, slideshows, music, videos. They're all candidates for Play 2. Go ahead and do them. So the last one I didn't really talk about was Tap to Send, and that's via NFC, which my Surface Pro here doesn't have, so you don't see it under that list of devices. And you get this for free by implementing the share contract. So if you share that through the Data Transfer Manager and you set a URI, under devices you'll see Tap to Send. So you can tap your phone and share URIs between your two devices. So that's another one you get for absolute free. Said print can be complicated. My code there was nice and simple because I was assuming basically one page worth of text. If you're going to go beyond that or you have complicated layouts, you're going to need to do some work, especially around things like pagination. So really have a think about that one. Oh, sorry. Settings. This is our last charm. I'll go back and probably do some, we've got some time, so I'll show you an extra couple of things and a few of the other charms as well. So, how does settings work? Bring up the music app again. From the side, pick settings. So we see a list of things here, as well as a common area around the bottom here. So that's always there. And this list here, is what your app provides. Now at the bottom, you'll see two here that you'll see almost in every app: permissions and rate and review. These are ones the system provides for you. When you're developing, you won't see rate and review because your app's not coming from the store. Once it's coming from the store, rate and review will be for free, and it'll take you straight to the store app. Permissions, always there. When you're building it, you'll always see it. So this lists a couple of things, what the app is, who built it, its version number. And then the top part here, this checkbox, is about permissions the user can toggle on and off. So this will be things like, can your app access the camera? Can it send notifications? Can it access location and so on? So these are things that users explicitly said yes or no they can't. And they can come back here and change them later on. The last part here is the app capabilities. So these are things that the app has said, yes, I need to do, and you can't tell me no, unless without not installing the app. So music app is kind of useless without an internet connection and a music library. So these are declared as capabilities that they must have, and you can't sort of turn these off without uninstalling the app. But these are the things that are listed also in the store. So when you're in a store, you'll see these capabilities declared here. So this page here is a status and rate and review will always be there. The other ones are up to you. You can put as many or as little as you want in here. And you'll see two kind of patterns. The first one, like help, is just invoking Internet Explorer. It's taking me out to a web page, which is the help for this app. And the second one is something like preferences, where we're getting a flyout from the side, which looks like they're using the old design. But so you'll see these two patterns basically repeated quite a bit, either a flyout or an HTML page. So, how do we get this done? Now, all the other charms so far have been done on a page basis. We're going to be doing this on certain pages. We're going to be doing sharing, we're going to be doing printing, we're going to be searching. Settings, you should probably do at the app level. You could do it on a per-page basis, but I would find that as you move through the app and your settings changed, that would be kind of weird. So I would do this at the whole app level, and that way your app settings are consistent throughout the application. So in my apps.mlcs, I have a method here called configure settings, which I'm calling on basically app initialization. We have a class here called settings pane. It's much like the managers. You get it for the current view. In this case, it'll be for our entire application. And we attach to an event called commands requested. So in that event, our request has a collection called application commands. And we just create new settings commands and add them to that. Now, the constructor for settings command has three properties. The first one is just some sort of unique identifier. The second is obviously the text to display. And the third is a callback on what will be called when they select that setting. So it's actually a really simple API. And from that point, the settings charm is done. What you do from there on, it's really up to you. But as I said, most of the common patterns are going to be launching a website or showing some sort of fly up. So we've got both of those examples here. Bottom example here is the view website. So all I'm doing when that setting the command is chosen is calling the launcher and saying, launch to this website. And we're done. Nice and easy. The next two, the two above, are using the new control called settings fly up. So this is a control that's new in 8.1. If you're doing 8.0 development, there's a library called Callisto from a guy called Tim Hoyer, and that contains an almost identical settings control. So that's available on NuGet. So 8.0, Callisto, settings control, settings flyout, 8.1, settings flyout already exists. So the way we create these is under Add New. Under Windows Store, right at the bottom, we have Settings Flyout. This creates this one nice and easy. I've created a few already. So if we look here at Privacy Policy, it's just SAML, as you've seen before. Right at the top, we're declaring that it's a Settings Flyout rather than a page. Two important properties at the top are the icon source and the title. So if I go back into my app, bring out settings, pick privacy policy, we see a title at the top and an icon, and then our content below, the back button we get for free, it's part of the control. And if we hit the back button, we just go back to settings. So instead of icon source and title, this is where they come in. And below that, we are free to do basically anything we want in terms of controls and so on. You know, we can put images, text boxes, anything we want in here. So I've just declared some text here. And for my other one, as I said here, I can put buttons in here to do things like clear search history. All sorts. So I'll quickly show that. So again, options view is just a settings flyout, just as before. And we can hook up button event handlers, as we've done countless times. So in this case, when I hit clear history, I'm calling, getting a search suggestion manager for our search box, calling clear history on it. And then I call hide, so this programmatically hides that flyout when we're done with it. So it sort of speeds up the user experience, gets the user back to what they're doing really quickly. And now how do we show this? So back in our app XAML, I have a quick helper method here called open settings view. It takes a T, where T is a settings flyout. Just create a new instance of it. So T will either be our privacy policy view or our options view. And just call show. That's all we need to do. It controls the animation, it controls the flyout, all in a programmatic way that's appropriate for your control. So the settings flyout control, as I said, 8.0, it's in Callisto on NuGet. 8.1, it's built in, as you can see in Visual Studio. When you're storing settings, have a thought process about should the setting be local or should it be roaming. Most settings, if you can't really decide, go for roaming. because what that means is when they come to another device, the user, they install your app, they start it up, and it's going to look like they've configured it from their other machine. So by default, go with roaming. There will be some settings you'll do that only make sense on that machine based on, you know, if you've got file access or anything like that. So by default, go with roaming, maybe local. So privacy policy, it's rather important. If you declare that your app can access the internet, store certification says you must have a privacy policy. And they will fail you if you don't. So if you declare in any way that you can access the internet, you will have to have a privacy policy. And you've got to have it in a couple of different places. You've got to have it within your app, and you've got to have it at a URL that can be accessed from outside the store. Because what will happen is in the store, in the store, we see a lot of information here, and part of that will be the privacy policy link. So you've got to have a web-accessible privacy policy somewhere, and then have it accessible also within the store, your app itself. And you can use the same one. So if they pick privacy policy within the app, you don't need to show a flyout. You could just send them to the same one that your store's linking to as well. But if you don't have it, you will fail. So make sure you've got it there. So that's basically the tour of most of the charms. We've got a little bit of extra time, so I'll show a couple of new interesting and cool things. So one of the new things... One of the new things that came in 8.1 was that previously everyone thought share was maybe a little bit empty. If your app couldn't share something, then share was kind of useless. That's changed, which is really fantastic. So now share is going to do something no matter what. So if we go back to this page here, I've really got nothing to share at this point, but I can invoke the share charm, and I instantly get the availability to share a screenshot of my app right now to, obviously, apps that support taking pictures and so on. The other one we can do, so if we go to something like music again, invoke share. The other thing we can do is share a link to the store. The reason we didn't get that option in my app is because my app's not coming from the store. When it comes from the store, your user will always have access to the ability to share screenshots and share links to your app. So if I go to something like share it to mail, you know, I can now email store links to anyone and so on. So share's always going to do something, which is fantastic. The only other thing about share I want to talk about is something called an advanced feature, something called fail with display text. So I'm on just a random page in music. I pull out share. Share can't share anything right now, but it tells me why. So it's saying, hey, if you want to share something, you know, go in, select a song, hit share. And you can see that in that text there. So if we bring it out, you know, to share something, select an artist, album, or song. So this is called fail with display text. So back in our code, in here, we can call a method, instead of sharing data, we can do something like fail with the display text and tell the user what they need to do in order to share. So one of the different patterns about this, so if we go ahead and want to do this, is rather than invoking the data transfer manager on each page for the ones that share, we set it up for the entire app, and then what we have to do is actually work out, hey, what's on the screen at the moment? Can that be shared? If not, tell them how. So it's a bit more of an advanced pattern. Okay. To sum it all up, give you time for questions. Use the charms often as it makes sense. You know, a lot of these you can get for free or really, very quickly. To add charms into something like that Channel 9 app, other than print, possibly took 2 hours tops. and you've got a whole lot of new features you can add and talk about in your marketing or to your boss to say, hey, I got this new feature and it took me 6 hours and take half the day off. You know, with some careful thought, you can fit most of these in some way. You know, almost all apps should will have search in some way. If you've got share, you know, you're going to be displaying data. They're going to want to email it. They're going to want to put it in OneNote or bookmark URIs or anything like that. So almost all apps will have share in some way, which is fantastic. And if you've got any sort of content creation, as I said before, think about being a share target. You know, as being an entry point to share, and do some really inventive things there. Cool, that sums it all up really. The source code for this is up on GitHub under that URI there, on Marker Metro. There's some great build talks that are up on Channel 9 that cover a lot of this stuff as well. The first one is basically all about search and a lot about the changes that are coming in 8.1. The next one there is building apps that work together, and that covers both share and a lot of other stuff around things like protocol activation. The other thing is Ryan here is running a games competition for Windows 8, and you can win a lot of great prizes building games for both Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And if you've got time, highly encourage it. So the other related content here at TechEd, tomorrow I think it is a good, great talk on taking advantages of Windows 8.1 and making your apps fly. They're both by a good mate at Datacom, so go ahead and take a look at those. Other than that, I'll hand it off to questions and fill out your evaluation forms. Win stuff. You want to have anything to ask?
In the new settings flyer, the background color, is it possible to be able to determine what the theme color is that the user is using in Windows, their Windows theme color, and use it as the background color?
No. So I think what sounds like it's been is a conscious decision by Windows 8, at least, to say, we don't want you to try and mimic the system colors or try and mimic system dialogues and rather have a consistent theme for your application rather than being a sort of try and fit in and look as part of the system. I think it's also maybe a security thing, you know, don't look like the system. That way you can't try and spoof stuff, et cetera. So that's why they may have locked that down a bit. Cool. Anyone else? Excellent. Thank you.